There have been incredibly difficult times that often led us to where he would like us to go.
That they could administer to the people and minister to the people who they had.
Ultimate inner victory is how we embrace the greatest gift that God has given to us, his son Jesus Christ.
Hello and welcome to Latter-day Profiles. I'm Brian Howard and I'm here on the campus of Brigham Young, University of Idaho, and joining me in Provo, Utah is Charlie Bird. Charlie, welcome.
Hi, Brian. It's good to be here.
Good to have you. Charlie, a lot of people would have seen Charlie and not known it was him. He was the mascot for BYU, the Cosmo, the Cougar, the one who went viral so many times for the incredible dance routines with the Cougarettes. So that's good to know who that is behind the mask. And we want to talk a little bit about that. Charlie's also an author, the author of the book Without the Mask, Coming Out and Coming Into God's Light. And many of you will have seen that as well. And if you haven't, I recommend that you pick that up and read about Charlie's experiences. Charlie, before we get into Cosmo and your book, let's talk a little bit about you and your background. As we were talking before, you grew up in Missouri, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in southwest Missouri. I always joke that there's more cows than people where I grew up. So lots of fields. People say, what did you do in high school for fun? And I'm like, I have no idea. I really don't know looking back. Go to the river, ride around on four-wheelers, stuff like that.
All the good stuff in a small town. That sounds fun. What was your involvement as far as church goes? Were there many young men, young women, people to do stuff with?
Kind of. Not really. I mean, we were definitely a large minority. I think in my graduating class, there were 5 members of the church, myself included. But a lot of them were cousins and family around that area. So I hung out with just family members. We'd do gatherings, and I'm pretty close in age to my siblings. I'm the middle of 5, 2 older sisters, a little brother, a little sister. And so we just kind of stuck together, you know. And then the cool thing about what I really loved about that area is, like, because there's not so many members of the church, there's more of like a vast geographical coming together. So we'd have like multi-stake dances, and we'd pull people from St. Louis and Kansas City and just really get to know people in the entire region. And that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be totally fun. This sounds like fun experiences growing up. Well, tell us about, you served a mission. Where did you go?
Yeah, I got called to the San Bernardino mission in California, and it switched to Redlands when I was there and just kind of toggled between those names. I think it's back to San Bernardino now. But yeah, that's where I was. I was actually in the same area for 18 months.
Oh, wow.
And it was a little 2-mile by 2-mile square. And so I know that like the back of my hand. I met a guy last week that was from, it's a city called Fontana. And I asked him what his address was growing up. And he told me, I said, I know exactly what your house looks like.
8 months in a few block area, you're going to know every street and every corner. That's pretty funny. Exactly. What was the experience like for you? Was it an enjoyable experience serving as a missionary?
Yeah, I absolutely loved serving as a missionary. It was interesting for me. I even mentioned this in my book. For me, there's a lot of my life has been spent kind of trying to change myself to fit in with society, and especially my youth and adolescent years. When I was serving as a missionary, I realized that I didn't have to do that anymore, because all of like the labels that I was afraid of being called were shed when I put on the name tag, and I was just Elder Bird, and I had a clear purpose, and people didn't see me as anything else but a missionary. And because of that, I was kind of able to tap in a little bit more to my real personality and the unique talents and gifts that I feel I've been blessed with, and not be embarrassed by those, but instead magnify them and use them to reach out to people and share the gospel.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, as growing up and then also serving the mission, then, you know, as a member of the church and someone who really believes in Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ, and then when you start to feel, you know, at whatever age it was, gay, then that's got to be difficult to try and balance out. What were those years growing up through a mission like, and how did you, try and rectify everything and make things balance out?
Yeah, for sure. So I always knew I was a little bit different. I didn't really know why. From my earliest memories, there was something unusual about me. When I was about 13 or 14, I realized that a large part of that unusualness was that I was attracted to men. And that realization was shocking and quite honestly traumatic. It was scary. It just scared me. I didn't really know where to put that information. It was unexpected. And I ended up just trying to avoid it as much as possible. And I kind of became very calculated about it. The way I was treating my romantic feelings was almost like a battle, right? And I would try a tactic, and then if it wouldn't work, I'd move to the next one. So I went through a couple like phases of avoidance. I went through phases of just fasting and praying to change, and for God to take at the time what I thought was a defect away from me. And then it kind of graduated into more conversion therapy and like psychology studies, trying to figure out what in my brain wasn't firing right. And then ultimately I just decided that I was going to force myself to hate gay people so much that it would never catch up to me. I was like, if I just completely just, my avoidance became like, I don't know, like almost a counterattack. Mm-hmm. A counterattack against all things LGBTQ in hopes that it would never get me, you know? I'm not sure if that makes sense. It was complex and kind of all over the place. And again, that's another reason why going on a mission was so nice, because I kind of got to take a break from that for the first time in years. And I had a clear purpose. I wasn't worried about the future. I wasn't worried about dating or relationships or feeling like I had to go on a date with a girl or something. I could just be me. And the most difficult thing though was when I came home from my mission, I really, really thought that I would be straight. I believed that if I worked hard enough, I was faithful enough, and obedient enough, that God would change me and make me whole. And when that didn't happen, that's when I really, really started having to stop running and look at this and say, this is still here. What am I going to do with it?
Yeah, a major challenge. You know, at some point, I'm going to come back to this, but at some point you're at BYU. How did Cosmo the Cougar come about? And then, you know, obviously there's a connection there between you deciding to write this book. But let's talk about Cosmo the Cougar. How did that happen?
Yeah, there's the student center, it's called the Wilkinson Center. I was eating lunch there one day and I saw a little flyer that said Cosmo tryouts. It said, can you dance? Can you do flips? Try out for Cosmo. And I was like, I can dance. I can do flips. So I just went to tryouts just kind of randomly after seeing that flyer. 2 hours later, I showed up, walked in there, and tryouts were brutal and difficult. It's like a physical challenge and then a lot of like skills-based assessments. And I performed really well. And this was my freshman year before my mission. I went to 1 year of school and kind of made it on the practice squad. I was young and gangly and kind of awkward still, but they saw something in me. And then I came home from my mission and kind of just did the same thing, showed up at tryouts. And actually the first time I tried out, I didn't make it when I came home from my mission, but I just never left. Because I knew what time they were practicing. And I was like, I want this so bad. I just wouldn't leave. I just kept showing up. And I'd be like, what can I wash? What can I carry? You need me to move a trailer? I'll move a trailer. And I just kind of chipped away until I found my spot on the team. So that was pretty cool.
Well, you know, a lot of accolades. Obviously, you developed from that gangly, you know, pre-missionary to somebody who could really dance, and because lots of viral videos with Cosmo dancing with the Cougarettes and doing a lot of cool things, you know, on the basketball games, stuff like that. Tell me a little bit about that, because that's actually, it'll be a little fear and trepidation going out there. Of course, you've got the mask on, so nobody knows who you are, so I guess you've got that going for it. If something goes wrong, it's like, well, that was Cosmo. I guess nobody knows who it is, right?
A little bit of disassociation there. Honestly, for me, every time I put on the suit and the mask, it was kind of like a superpower. It was like an Iron Man suit where I would put it on and it would increase my abilities. And I don't know if it was just a placebo effect, but I felt like I never got hurt and I could do things that I normally can't do. And the adrenaline was just so, so much. I used to sit on the sidelines and watch the Cougarettes perform their dance routines. And I loved them. I would just watch just with a big smile and wide eyes. And every time I would be like, man, I wish I could be doing that. Like, I wish I was a Cougarette. As cool as it is to be Cosmo, how cool would it be to be a dancer? I was like, there's an idea. And so I just talked to the coaches and I was like, hey, I think I can hang, like, teach me the choreography. I think Cosmo can, like, make a cameo with the Cougarettes. So it was kind of my brainchild, and we just worked through some of the kinks of it. And I don't think anyone fully expected the international reaction that would come from that. But it was definitely fun. It was a really wonderful ride to just have nobody know that it was me, and everyone sharing this viral video, like multiple viral videos. And, you know, my friends, people, class would be like, hey, have you seen this? And they're sharing in a class, the teachers are showing it, everyone's speculating who it is. I'm just sitting in the back like, yeah.
That sounds totally fun. Is that one of your favorite parts of being Cosmo, being able to do that? Or did you have a favorite part about being that? Was it actually putting on the suit and being super, super Cosmo?
You know, this might sound a little bit cheesy, but Cosmo does a lot of community outreach and works with a couple of foundations that focus on children who have disabilities or terminal illnesses. And so I did a lot of community outreach type of visits. And for me, that the sacredness of being in that space, and it was almost like you go to this family and for a little bit, everything's normal. For a little bit, everything's okay. Or for a little bit, this kid forgets how much pain they're in because they're with a hero. They're with Cosmo, you know? For me, that was unprecedented. And I think it built my character more than anything, really. And I sometimes tear up when I think about some of the kids that I made connections with and who've passed on. And it's just, you know, it was sobering. So as incredible as the glitz and the glam, and I would travel and I went to America's Got Talent and I was at ESPN, like, I went, like, that was amazing. But there was something extra special about sitting in those spaces with humans and having them feel that experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've shared in your book that being Cosmo actually helped you decide that you were going to share publicly being gay. And so how did that come about, and how did you make a decision? Because obviously people decide, you know, how they want to deal with things differently, very private, very public, somewhere in between. But you felt like it was an obligation to share your story.
Yeah, definitely. So I did an internship in Washington, D.C. Between my junior and senior years at BYU. And that was a really, like, self-exploratory period for me. I was out on my own. I could kind of be anything. And I started asking myself deeper questions about my identity. And more importantly, I started asking God deeper questions. And these things that I would always run from or just assume that God didn't care or didn't like, I really tried to take more of a personal revelation, almost like a Joseph Smith approach, to say, I'm really confused. Everyone's saying different things, and I don't know who I am or where I fit. And so I had a really big shift in one specific moment where I prayed. And my prayer switched from, like, change my orientation to, what is this and why and how can I honor it? Like, if this isn't going to change, what should I do with it? And I had this very profound moment of clarity, and I felt God's love, like, really felt it for the first time. I truly, it was almost like a curtain was pulled back and I could see me as a spiritual being, as a child of God. And that was something that was always hard for me to believe. Even though I'd been singing it since primary, that the fact that me, with my broken parts and the things that I didn't like about myself or didn't understand, could actually be divine and useful was such a shift. And so I went back to school my senior year with kind of a new mindset of, there's beauty in me, and like, how should I move forward as I am, not trying to change. At the same time, I still wasn't out as gay. I was still hiding that socially, except in small circles, because I felt like I had to. I'd seen a lot of community rejection. I was very scared of that. And this dichotomy of wearing a mask was just so obvious to me. It encompassed all parts of my life. Because on the one hand, I'm hiding that I'm Cosmo, the mascot. And when I put on this mask, everyone loves me. Everyone accepts me. I'm a superstar. And I hide that part of my identity. And then on the other hand, I'm putting on a different mask because like hiding my orientation from people because of that same community, because I was scared of them, of their rejection. And that juxtaposition was just at the forefront of everything I did. So after I graduated, I actually never planned on telling anyone I was Cosmo or that I was gay. Just publicly, I didn't feel the need for that. But I was just watching and seeing what was happening. And I just kept watching a lot of people get hurt and seeing a lot of misunderstandings and misconceptions being shared about what it means to be gay. And I was kind of waiting for some sort of leader or point of reference or something. And I wasn't seeing it happen. And so I started praying, and I felt strongly that one of the reasons that I had been so successful as the mascot was to give me a platform to share my story as gay and a little bit more publicly talk about some of these issues that in our culture are pretty taboo still and maybe uncomfortable. And I just felt really good about it. So I did it. And that's kind of how I stumbled into where I am today.
So the concept of writing a book, did you approach, how did that come about? You say, you know what, because a lot of times I'm going to write a book, but then where do you go from there? So how did you go through that process and say, okay, now I'm going to share this in a book?
Yeah. So I wrote a coming out article and I published it in the Deseret News as an opinion editorial, and it kind of blew people's minds. I imagined it would kind of be like a little bit salacious. Some people would kind of be interested, but the idea that Cosmo was gay was very intriguing to people, and the article did really well. So Deseret Book actually approached me and asked me if I would. First they're like, "Did you write this article by yourself?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, I'm not letting anybody touch it. Like this is me, you know, this is my soul." And they're like, "Could you write a book?" And it's actually funny because I didn't grow up as a dancer or a performer. I grew up playing basketball and running track. And as much as I'm good at it and I love it, I've never felt totally comfortable in like a professional performance arena. But I've always been a really good writer. And so when they asked me to write the book, I was like, finally, someone is asking me to do something I know how to do. And it was really, the writing process was really beautiful because I was kind of able to look at my life through a more mature lens and process a lot of the things that I'd been through and see stages of development and growth. And it was a great blessing to me because I feel like I still have a pretty ambiguous future. There's not really like a handbook or a framework of how to be a gay member of the church. And seeing how far I've come in this trajectory that I've been on made me a lot more confident that I can have a healthy trajectory in the future. I'm still not exactly sure what that looks like, and I don't think anyone really is, but I feel much more grounded and solid in my principles and in my faith because I was able to process and write these feelings.
You know, one of the things you said about the book is you wrote it as if something you would have liked to have had growing up, answered some things. What are some of those things? I know we don't have time to go through the whole book, but what are some things that you would have liked to have maybe at 14 or maybe at 18 that you wrote in the book that you think would have really helped you then that you've written now?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think when I was, I'm thinking of three just off the top of my head. One of them is just a really deep, profound understanding of the divinity of each human. Like I said, I didn't gain that until I was 22, 23 years old. And there was a disconnect, you know, I didn't really believe that I was worthy of God's love. And because of that, I closed myself off to it quite a bit. It was kind of like a downward spiral. On top of that, I wish I would have known that there was nothing wrong with me. And that's still something, I mean, because of society, I feel like, without trying to sound dramatic, I've internalized messages that there's something wrong with me from all around me. And like a same-sex orientation isn't a defect, it isn't deviant, it's actually just a natural thing that happens to quite a few people. And so the normalization of that experience, I feel like would have really helped me feel less like a freak and more like a human, which I would have loved. And then the third thing I'm thinking of is just, as like lame as it sounds, to just be yourself. Because I spent so much time running away from me or changing me or trying to fit in into a mold that always felt uncomfortable and paranoid. But the times when I've truly been me, uninhibited, just this is my personality, this is what I know, this is who I am, that's when I've found the most success in my life. And I think that can be seen when Gay Cosmo decided to dance with the Cougarettes. You know, I had no inhibitions about being on an all-girl dance team. I just wanted to perform. And because of that, I was able to open experiences. And, or even on my mission, when I really was myself and stopped being embarrassed of like my feminine handwriting, I started making like these really incredible thank you cards and birthday cards for people that helped them feel valued and seen. And I became more successful and trusting. So I think, I guess along with that, like Christ knows us personally. And my view of the atonement was always, of Christ's atonement was always, he takes away sin. But it's kind of shifted. And now it's, I view it more as, there are so many ways to go in life. There are so many complexities. But Jesus Christ knows us perfectly. And so if we connect with that, we can figure out who we are, who we really are at our core, and how to move forward. And so the atonement of Jesus Christ in repentance has become less about like restitution and guilt for me, and more about direction and agency, and just trusting that I can step here because God said to, and that there's going to be a step there. And I don't know if that's likely to know all of that at 14 years old, but I feel like I have a much better grasp of it now. And so if I can kind of give that information or make it available for the gay 14-year-olds that are right now, I'm hoping that that'll make their process a little bit easier than mine was. So,
yeah, you know, struggle. Maturity does do a lot of things if we look back at things. Of course, all of us look back at ourselves at 14 and wince a little bit. If we don't, then we're something's wrong, right? So now, you know, as you move forward, it sounds like really you developed a strong testimony of Christ and the atonement. You know, what's been the feedback? I guess people have obviously spoken to you, and maybe that 14-year-old or 18-year-old, someone's come up to you. What have they shared with you of how they feel about what you've written and how it's impacted their lives?
Yeah, I think the response has been overwhelmingly positive. And it's really beautiful to see families coming together. I almost don't feel worthy of the honor. It's very humbling because there's families that have been broken, and there's people who have been in feuds or had disagreements, or kids who have felt alone and are dealing with depression and anxiety and suicide ideation. And to have, I've had honestly thousands of people share stories like this of, hey, I read your book, and then I reached out to my son and his partner, and we haven't talked to them in a couple years. Or, hey, I'm reading your book now, and I think I need to come out to my parents, and I finally feel like I can. And hearing these stories and just being able to watch this thread of healing and know that God was good enough to let me be a small part of that has been really just, like I said, it's humbling, it's awe-inspiring, and I almost don't feel worthy, but I'm really, really grateful.
I appreciate Charlie. I appreciate you taking the time. And by the way, Charlie, now in graduate school, you're studying, what are you studying? Tell us what you're studying.
Yeah, I'm doing a master's in social work at BYU. Trying to be a therapist, work on my therapy skills. And yeah, I really love it. It's good to be back in Utah. And I do a lot of like speaking, firesides. And I also do a podcast called Questions from the Closet, where we take taboo or just like important questions about the LGBTQ LDS experience and do that every week. And it's been a really cool project. So I'm really happy and doing well.
Great, Charlie. Just a reminder, the book is Without the Mask, Coming Out, Coming into God's Light. And you, of course, check that out and the podcast that you mentioned as well. Charlie, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. I wish you all the best. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. It was wonderful to be here. Thank you.